So the big question for today is that what does it mean to make disciples or to evangelize in a world where faith and beliefs are shaped by short videos, 30 seconds videos, or short sound bites that are listened to anywhere, anytime, messages that are very brief, very compressed, listened to in gym, during workout, during driving a car, during cooking a meal. That's a tough question. We have entered a world where people do not take the most of their beliefs from the pulpit or from the church place, but it's somewhere abstractly online. And many of people who come to faith or come to spiritual answers, they maybe never ever enter a religious building in their life. They will just somehow consume the answers online. And I believe that's the online space is the space we're called to fill in. Not the only space. I believe the physical space is important as well, and I will come to that during my talk. But I would like to call attention to the online space. That is a great gap we should fill in and step inside to it. So on February the 3rd, 2020, just a month before COVID, Barna Group released its State of the Church report. And this graph shows the trends on how pastors were thinking. And when they were asked what was on their minds, like what are they thinking about, do you know where is the trends in online church and digital technology? Which part is this down there, the latest one. That was a month before COVID. Yeah, so if you would ask the pastors and the people that are leading churches, like, what do you worry about? What do you think about? What do you contemplate on? There will be the watered-down gospel teachings, the cultural shift to a secular age, poor discipleship models, and 1 month before COVID, when the world changed, the online, the keeping up with the latest digital technological trends was the latest or the lowest. And a month later, everything changed. The whole world changed. The habits of the people changed forever. Well, they will be changed a couple of times. But since then, the world is different. And I realized that if COVID thing hit our society when I was born, which is 1985, if it hit then, it would be a different story. But because of the infrastructure that was developed recently, the world has shifted to a new era. Apps like that, Wolt, Netflix, Zoom. Suddenly, you can get groceries from from the Wolt, or we use the Uber Food, not the Uber Food. Uber Food, but Bolt Food. Yeah, but like we had all these apps installed during the COVID time. You don't go to cinema, you watch the Netflix. You don't go to a church meeting, to the church building, you have the Zoom, thanks God, because there are so many meetings. And companies that were thinking about how to use the digital technologies, they had an advantage. And many of those companies had astronomical profits during the COVID season, Zoom and other companies. And even when the lockdowns ended, and I can tell you the lockdowns in Slovakia were pretty strict. When they ended, the habits of people and the culture changed. So sometimes you don't say you're going to have a date night. You say, I'm going to have a Netflix and chill night. And you order the dinner not through the phone. I never ever call again the restaurant to have a pizza. I just click the app since then. I lost all the numbers to pizza places because everything is in an app. It's pretty normal to say, I have a Zoom meeting. So I'm also very active as a member of denominational board. So we have all kinds of meetings we have to have. I don't have to travel so much. I don't have to take the train all the time, only a couple of times. I have a Zoom meetings. And so do you. So the world has changed. The habits of people have changed. And the question is, how are we doing as a church? And the problem of church is, and I will come to that later on, is that we're always a little bit hesitant, skeptical. So the world has moved from analog to digital, from offline to online, from local to global. And the question that church needs to answer is, how effective are we in sharing the gospel in this new context? So during this workshop, I will give a big picture, maybe some things you already know. I know you know many things. So I will just give the big frame. Then I will share a little bit of my story, how we use online tools and online media in our context. But before we go into technicalities, it's always good to start with the commission we have as a Christians. So you're in Evangelism Network. I believe you have talked about this a lot, so I will be really brief. Sometimes we think that or confuse that the thing Jesus gave us was not the Great Commission, but the Great Idea. And that's the difference. It's not the Great Idea, it's the Great Commission. It's not just an idea. Well, if you have time and energy, maybe you could do some missions and evangelisms. No, it's a commission. Like, you have to do that. It's who you are, what you have to do. And online space, it's part of the commission. And I will explain why. So this is how it goes. So go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations. There are three movements in this text. The first is go, which means move towards. And it's opposite to the word come. Jesus didn't say, come and wait until they come, and then you make disciples. He says, go. And in an online space context, it means don't wait until they come to your building, because they may never come to your building, but go online. Don't wait until they will appreciate your sermon that you have crafted for Sunday, but maybe think about how to repurpose your sermon so it can be used online. So don't wait until they find you, but go. So what if effectiveness was also measured by how far the church community reaches out instead of only by how much people the auditorium fills up? So a little bit of my story. We planted the church years ago, and that was the reality. I was planting with a group of 15 people with our kids, something over 20. On Sunday morning, I was preaching to 20 people, but when I posted the sermon online, it was listened to by hundreds of people. So that's the difference between come and go. Okay, the second movement is make disciples. It's about transformation. It's not just about informing and sharing content, but it's to be a vehicle to transformation. And transformation is done by building relationships. Transformation is not really done in a classroom where you sit and write or you consume content. That's only a part of it. But the real deep transformation happens in life as we go together. That's why it's one of my most favorite verses. Like, it's not good for men to be alone. And the third movement is all nations, which I call unknown others. It's people we never met, we even don't know about. We don't know that they even exist, but they're out there. There's a quote I can use by Nona Jones. That's a great book. I will point to the book later on as well. We can use social technology to swim out into the deep, unknown waters of the digital world to connect with people we would never meet otherwise. So that's the great opportunity at online space. People are there. They are there more hours a week than they would be in a church. When I am at the gym, many people have podcasts in their ears and they listen to podcasts. And going public into online space brings this opportunity. So we could say that church should be a transformative movement toward others. We can do it on the streets. That's something we're fine-tuning for decades. Like, we're getting really good at that. But also the space where we have to get good at is the online space. This is a picture from our town in Žilina. Some of Slovaks know our downtown. There's a amazing ice cream in the corner there. It's called Scoop. So whenever you go to Žilina, just make sure you visit Scoop. Actually, that's the square where a lot of evangelism, like street evangelism, happens. Sometimes there's a stage under the church. At the stage, we do concerts. Our church did an evangelism concert at the stage. That was one of the best experiences. This square is really old. Our town is around 800 years old. And 800 years ago, this was the place where the life of the city happened. So all the great big ideas were shared on the square. The trade was happening at the square. All the gossip was happening at the square. All the public announcements were done on the square. That was the space where the life of the town was happening. And Bill Gates, who is a technology guy, I don't think I need to explain who Bill Gates is in depth. He said, intriguing idea. He said, the internet is becoming the town square for the global village of tomorrow. Historically, the town squares were the hub of the activity of people, but right now, it's not the town square. It's the online space. And right now, the most growing religious group in Slovakia, but also in Europe, is some parts of the Europe is the nuns. That are people non-affiliated with the church. They're not necessarily anti-religious or anti-faith. They're not necessarily anti-faith, but they're anti-church in Slovakia. So Slovakia used to be a Catholic country. Now the numbers have dropped. We would say, or the census shows up, that it's around 75% of people are Catholics. And 25% of people are nuns. But the reason why they're getting outside of church is not that they're not having a spiritual questions or spiritual need. They just don't enter the church anymore. That's the thing. And but in that context, it's good to know that the internet, and it's again the Nona Jones author, internet is not just the thing people do, it's the place where people live. And this whole group of nuns who never go to church but still have spiritual questions and spiritual desires, they're out there at internet, or using internet. And many people understand this. There are many internet evangelists who understand this psychology and this social group dynamics. You know this guy? Mr. Beast. Of course, everyone knows Mr. Beast. So I didn't do the latest calculations, but some time ago, all his channels combined made 400 million followers, which is more than the citizens of USA. Like, he has 400 million followers. And he knows how to do his job really good. Everyone knows who is Mr. Beast. So sometimes I have a beard longer and I wear a bright jacket like Mr. Beast, like the violet one, like really shiny. And I was walking through the town and somebody just screamed at me, "Hey, Mr. Beast." Like, some random Slovak guy knows who is Mr. Beast.
Some in the room may not know who he is. Can you just tell us?
So that's the most famous and richest YouTuber. Like, all he does is he creates YouTube videos, funny videos, TV shows, and he's a young guy. So this is the most popular YouTube influencer. One of the ones I follow is Gary Vaynerchuk. Vaynerchuk. Do you know this guy? He's an entrepreneur. He's doing a lot of kind of businesses. He's very energetic. He's like that. And he has a team of people recording him all the times, and he gives advices and he talks to people. And I don't know when he sleeps. I don't get it. He looks like he can do everything. But he has a followers. He gives hope. There's one video I saw of a guy coming to him and telling him, my company bankrupted. I thought I was going to end my life, and I saw your video and it gave me hope, and I'm here to testify that I'm back on my feet, and I'm working hard, I'm pushing hard, thank you. So he influences the lives of people who are desperate, who are not only desperate, but also who are out there on the internet hurting, needing hope, needing vision, needing encouragement, and he does it. or this lady, Amy Purdy, she is a partially bionic. She has a bionic legs. And she's giving hope for the people who have these kinds of disadvantages. Or, you know, she says, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. Like, she's giving this motivational spirit. And what I try to prove is the thing that internet is not just a tool, it's a place where people are. Place where people are with their real lives. Internet is the place where you can get hope. It's the place where you can actually get hurt. It's the place where you can develop a relationship. If there's a marriage infidelity through internet, it's real. It's not virtual, it's not fake, it's real. If somebody is bullying someone at school through internet, it's not virtual, it's real. It's the place where real things happen. The date done through internet leads to marriage eventually, maybe, if it works out. And I do a lot of weddings, and some of the weddings started, the dating started at the internet, and it worked out well. So the big question is, where is the church? And that's my passion, like, to convince you that we need to be online as well. Not everyone is gifted to be online, but maybe some of you are. And the church has this habit of resisting change, and that's the problem. So when the radio started, when the TV started, whenever new technology came, church was almost always the last to adapt to the change, to the technology. Even with the online church, when we entered the COVID season, our church, we are the tech guys. Like, half of my church is IT people, and we're media people. So we knew there will be lockdowns. So even before the lockdowns, we created the whole concept of how we will do the church online, and we just jumped into the online ministry. And I think we thrived in that. The lockdowns didn't bother us. We did discipleship online. We actually baptized people after the lockdown ended, and those people came to the faith thanks online streams and the online mentoring we were giving to people. Some of them are becoming the members of our church. It's not the big number of people, but some. Even if two or three do, it's a big thing. But part of our church during the time was criticizing us, and there were people from the leadership, like the denominational leadership, that came. They found enough time to come and visit us and explain us that we are doing wrong thing, and to tell us that the church online is not the real church, because it's not the real relationship, it's not the real church. And I agree that if we have the option to be in person and we're lazy to meet and we're online, that's weird. But during the time when everyone's sitting at home and this is the only option to meet, the life was happening online. We were celebrating our birthdays online. When our family was celebrating birthday during the lockdown, we had the cakes on both sides of Zoom, and we were singing songs and having the cakes and playing the games, like some internet games together. So the church always is like behind, very skeptical, and I just want to encourage you, please jump over the fence somehow and think about the online space as very dangerous space, of course, or there's a potential to destroy the good stuff, but also it's the place where people are. They just are online. The opportunities is, when we were 800 years ago in our town, you had to be someone living in a town or staying at a town, meeting someone at the exact spot and exact time in order to get the news or in order to talk to him or her. If you missed it, you missed it. If there was a public announcement in our town square and you missed it, you missed it. You had to ask people who were there. But today, with the internet, anyone, anywhere, anytime can listen to your message or can interact with you. So if I post a sermon, a 16-year-old girl in Kenya can listen to the sermon. Also, 85-year-old guy in Australia can listen to the sermon. And if I publish the sermon on Sunday night in Slovakia, then Monday morning or Monday lunch, somebody in New York can have life changed or get angry with me or whatever about the sermon. So the online square, online public square, offers us unparalleled opportunities to share the gospel. It has never been so easy before. Also, one of the reasons why Apostle Paul was so effective with the gospel, a part of the Holy Spirit, is the Roman Empire's infrastructure he could use. So that's one of the reasons why he was so effective. This is like the modern infrastructure, not the Roman Empire, it's Internet Empire, Silicon Valley Empire, infrastructure we can use. Also, the great opportunity is that the public square has become democratic or democratized, which means in a conference like this, not everyone can speak on a microphone. Like, there are guests that are invited, that have all those PhDs and everything, and they speak on a microphone in a plenary session. Not anyone, but online, anyone can be heard. Anyone. So I know of a guy, I met him in person. He's Alex, he's from Serbia. He's like a teenager, maybe 15 years old. And all he had was old, broken Android phone with a broken glass. And he started recording TikTok videos with a gospel message because he was not allowed to preach at his church because of his age. He was passionate about the gospel, and he asked the leaders of the church, "Can I preach at church?" And they said, "No way." So he started a TikTok channel, and he has millions of views, like millions. Like, I will never achieve such views he has. And that it's not always easy because the Orthodox guys, they attack him, like they say all the bad things to him. But he has the attention and the publicity. So I can share the TikTok channel with you later on. He's a young guy and he has a big influence. So, and this is the great thing about the public square. Anyone, anywhere, anytime can listen, but also anyone, anywhere, anytime can teach or speak or preach.
Is it in Serbian? Or?
It's in Serbia.
But in Serbian, the language?
Yeah, the Serbian language. I understand every 10th word he says, but from time to time I watch, and he has a passion. And the TikTok has this engine when the videos that are the least professional made, they are pushed the most. And Alex said that when somebody gave him the iPhone and he recorded the video on iPhone, the views dropped like 10 times or something like that because TikTok thought, okay, now you're getting professional. So that was something magical. He was using old phone, really, really bad video quality, and he just published the message of gospel, and it works. So it's Serbian language. So maybe if you use AI, it can translate for you somehow. And the thing is that because of this very democratic nature of and like influential nature of social media, the behavior of people has changed. The way we consume content has changed. So, and I will explain that. I have a car. I don't have BMW, but I can show BMW on the picture over here at least. And my tail light broke. There was no light anymore when I was braking. So how did I fix the car? You know, I had an option to go to the service, like repair store, but I would have to pay a lot of money. And I am the tech guy, so I should be able to repair my car. So I went to YouTube and I typed, how should I repair the taillight of my Touran? That's my car. And I put the model number. And there was this guy with a really cheap camera, not good quality, recording how he unscrewed the light, what he pressed in, and that really easy one-minute video helped me, saved me a lot of money and helped me. And I believe you have the same experience. You're buying stuff, or you have to repair stuff, or maybe you're searching for something. You Google, and the research says that YouTube actually is the new Google. People search for their answers at YouTube. Google even has coined a term, the zero moment of truth. That's the behavior, and I will quote, "It's a new decision-making moment that takes place 100 million times a day on mobile phones, laptops, and wired devices of all kinds." So before the consumer makes a decision, consumer Googles and searches for the answers. So now I have a passion of riding a mountain bike, downhill, everything. My wife says it's dangerous, but she said no to motorbike. So I told her, so the mountain bike is okay? And she said, okay, mountain bike. But I spent hours online researching like which mountain bike is the best for me. I never entered the store. I never called a professional. I asked my friends, they gave me some hints, and then I just sat on a laptop and I was searching. I believe you know that. Maybe you're fans of guitar or whatever, and you're researching your own topics. And the same happens with the church, and the same happens with the faith questions, the same happens with the worldview questions, the same happens with the gender identity questions, the same happens with the political affiliations issues. People, when they have their zero moment of truth, they go to Google and they go to YouTube or even TikTok and they search for answers. And the question is, when the zero moment of truth comes, when people go searching online for hope, purpose, meaning, will they connect with your church? Or will they connect with your message? Or maybe not, but another question would be, are you happy with the results they will find online when they have their own zero moment of truth? So that's where our story began. Now I will tell you a little bit about our story. We do the church planting, that's one thing. But besides the church planting, me and my colleague Jose, we record podcasts. By the way, Jose is here at ELF. He's a very interesting guy. He lives in Slovakia. He's a Slovak pastor. He married a Slovak girl. He has Slovak Spanish kids right now. And he moved from Spain to Slovakia 12 years ago when he was 18. Now he's over 30 and he speaks perfect Slovak. And we do podcasts together. And that's funny because we are two pastors. He's Spanish, speaking Slovak. I'm the Slovak guy. And he was working for the marketing company, and I have a degree in IT technologies. So we're, I think, interesting combination of people. And we always had the passion to bring the gospel to the public space. We love to read books, we love to listen to podcasts, and there were many options, YouTube, X, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, but six years ago, we chose to do the podcasting. Podcasting is basically, somebody said the joke, like, what's the definition of podcasting? It's the two guys mansplaining. Like, so that was the idea. Like, we like to talk to each other anyways because we're colleagues. We always debate theological issues, practical issues of life. And let's record our conversation. 1 hour conversation on a microphone and publish that online. No editing, just the raw 1 hour conversation on anything. And we thought initially that it would serve our friends because we talk about those issues with our friends. So we initially thought it will be only like 10, 20 guys or girls listening to our podcast. Something happened and it's thousands of people today, but the podcasting was very easy to us because it's only a microphone. Today, to record a podcast, it only takes you to grab your phone, put it on a table, record your conversation, and publish that online for free. We have AI technologies today. I use those AI technologies when you filter the microphone from phone recording, and it sounds like a professional studio recording. It's amazing. So anytime we have guests, in our podcast who is visiting us online through Zoom, we get really bad audio, and I filter that through the AI, and it sounds like big microphone close to the mouth. It's amazing. And also, the famous Sarah Koenig said that podcasting is a medium that allows anyone to share their voice and their message with the world, and it's changing the way we consume and create content. So with the YouTube, you need to have a team of people who understand the YouTube psychology. And these days we have that. But you need to have cameras and a team of people and the designers who create thumbnails. Like to go on a YouTube, it takes a lot of intention to be successful. And we have guys in Slovakia that are doing a great job. You know, Svetonazor, Richard Nachbal. He has a team of 16 people making podcasts, and they started in YouTube podcast, and he started in September, and now he has 8,000 followers. It's not even a year, and he's aiming to get to 50,000, but eventually. But they have a strategy. It's a lot of energy, a lot of money put into that, and it's amazing. But podcasting is very simple. You just record your conversation. You choose either to edit the conversation or not edit and just publish online. So that was us. That was 6 years ago. Jose was 24, maybe, and I was 33. And that was our living room. Me and my family, we just moved in. You can see the mess. We just moved in. And we just had these microphones, and that was it. And we recorded the whole series, or whole season, within one day. That was season on self-care and Sabbath and rest. And we did the design. We did the name. We published that. And the story began. And we had these values: no editing, brutal honesty, respectful. So we realized anyone is listening to the podcast. It's Catholics, it's Lutherans, it's like the Free Church, it's the Baptist Church, it's the Assemblies of God church people, it's the unbelievers, it's the Muslims, it's the Buddhists. Anyone is listening to us. So we want to be respectful. It doesn't mean we will water down our convictions. It just means we will always respect our listeners. And the fourth thing is that we will not expect that anyone believes what we say, and we will not expect anyone understands what we are saying. So anytime we sat down and recorded the podcast, we had this visual image in our heads that we are sitting downtown in our square where the ice cream is. We're having microphones and anyone is listening to us. Like, anyone can listen to us. Anyone can listen or start listening in the middle of the conversation, or maybe at the end of the conversation, or leave after first 5 minutes of conversation. And it really helped us the way how we speak about topics. And I will come to that later on. We decided it will be relationship oriented, and we will develop a community. So this is us. This is some of our guests. Sometimes we record alone. Sometimes we have a guest. This is not our studio. This is the Bible Project Slovakia studio. And they let us to record there a couple of sessions. At some point, we gained the most popular Christian podcast vote in Czech Republic and Slovak Republic. So that was the award we were given. But since then, many podcasts started. We recorded 6 years ago. We were one of the first Christian podcasts. Since then, there are many Christian podcasts, and some of them are huge. So there's a Catholic God Zone Christian podcast. They have millions of views. They have tens of thousands of followers. But we are not there to compete with anyone. We're there to share our message. So, but it's nice to know that at some point, our listeners gave enough votes to give us a word. That was very encouraging. Slowly, we started to develop a team of people who help us. Some of them are here at ELF at the forum. Jose is here. Shugi is here. My brother is here. And we need a team because we are busy, busy pastors. Only thing we can do is talk. So we talk on a microphone, then we upload everything to cloud, and then the miracle happens. And somehow we get the social media done, and we get the YouTube done, and we get the Spotify and everything done. But also we developed the idea when people enter our world through online service, they can be drawn into more relationship. And one of the relationship ways, or the ways how to develop the relationship with people, is to publish a book where people spend time with you with something that is offline. So we, based on the podcast, we published 3 books. One is called The Unordinary Influencer. It's all about the purpose of life. And the message is, nobody is too ordinary in order not to have an influence. It means everyone's somehow special. So that's a book that sold out because of the podcast. It sold out within the month of release. So now we have a third print publishing. The second book is called The Reason I Don't Want to Be a Christian. That's one of our fans. He came to buy the first print copy. So he asked us, where are you bringing the first copies? And he traveled and he bought the first one. The reason I don't want to be a Christian, that's an apologetical book that explains what we mean when we say we are Christians, because it's so confusing in Slovakia. And we get it. Many people don't want to be Christians. They are nuns. For the same reasons, I wouldn't be a Christian if that was the truth about the Christianity. So in this book, we deconstruct the popular beliefs about God and share what we believe the Christianity is about. That's another story for another day. And this is the book I will be talking about this afternoon at the workshop. And it's called Leave Me Alone. And the subtitle says, how to experience and produce a peace in a restless world. Yeah, it means literally give peace. But in our language, this phrase means just leave me alone. It's like very annoying, like leave me alone. Yeah, but it's yeah, give a peace. Leave me alone. And it was posted, the hand belongs to the girl, that is, you can see her profile pic, and she bought the book, posted online, tagged our podcast, so that's how we develop also community. And we realized many churches use our podcast as a home group study or youth ministry study materials. They listen to our podcast, then they discuss or debate our podcast. Even some teachers used some of our episodes with their students. So we got an idea that we would create printed materials based on our episodes. So we have people who do that. They listen to our whole season, they transcribe the season, they put the discussion questions, they make the design, and you can either download the PDF for free, Slovaks, it's for free, and or you can buy and pay for printed, nice, shiny booklets. Later on, we were able to expand and participate on e-learning materials. That was recorded in Josiah Venture Slovakia. They were recording some apologetical e-learning materials. So that's how we participated. And we were invited to the public libraries, school libraries. So that's one of the lectures we were giving based on our books and podcasts and to some other events. So what I'm trying to say is, the only thing we did is we recorded one day session with a microphone and posted it online. Anything else you see was something we couldn't see ahead of time. We didn't have any strategy. We didn't have any like big ideas what we could do. We were just faithful to the calling to share some of our ideas online, and we would be surprised where that leads to. And of course, if we were more strategic, if we gave more time into that, it could be much better. And the case of Rishon Ajpal is the case that shows when you have a strategy and you put 100% into that, you can get to, I think he will be 10,000 subscribers on YouTube within the 12 months since the release. That's possible even in Slovakia, which is a very small country. So, but this is just meant to be as an encouragement. And I have 8 more minutes before we have Q&A, and I will dive into last one concept or idea, and I will get back to my favorite verse. It's not good that the man should be alone. And we are not made as a people just to consume the content. We're made to be known. We're made to have a relationship. And we intrinsically need relationships in order to flourish. And people online are searching for the relationship, even though they don't know they're searching for relationship. And they will never find it without other people. They need people. There's a whole generation in Japan. I don't know the word right now. Maybe you know it. Those are the young people that never go outside of their parents' apartment. They're only online. The food is brought to them, the clothes is brought to them, everything is brought to them. They never leave the room. They're only online. They even don't know that they're desperately searching for a relationship. Mark Zuckerberg, the Facebook owner, he knows that. This is what he said in Chicago at a conference. If we can do this, if we can do the Facebook, it will not only turn around the whole decline in community membership we have seen for decades, it will start to strengthen our social fabric and bring the world closer together. So he realizes that we need to bring the world close together, that's the real need of people he's addressing. And this is very intriguing what he said. Facebook can play a role that churches and Little League once filled. He wants to replace the church, basically. Church was the place that was restoring the relationship between people and God and people as well. You know, maybe John Ortberg, the author, and he wrote something really intriguing that I like this piece of his thinking. He's describing the Genesis situation where God created a man, and a man is alone, and God doesn't step in to fill the void for this aloneness, but creates another human being. And this is the way how John Ortberg describes that. It's a little bit longer quote, but I think it's very nice. What is striking is that the fall has not yet occurred. There is no sin, no disobedience, nothing to mar the relationship between God and the man. The human being is in a state of perfect intimacy with God. Each word he and God speak with each other is filled with closeness and joy. He walks with God in the garden in the cool of the day. He is known and loved to the core of his being by his omniscient, love-filled creator. Yet, the word God uses to describe him is alone. And God says, this aloneness is not good. Sometimes in church circles, when people feel lonely, we will tell them not to expect too much from human relationships, that there is inside every human being a God-shaped void that no other person can fill. That is true. But apparently, according to the writer of Genesis, God creates inside this man a kind of human-shaped void that God himself will not fill. No substitute will fill this need in you for human relationship. Not money, not achievement, not business, not books, I would add, not internet, not Zoom, not Facebook, not even God himself. Even though this man was in a state of sinless perfection, he was alone and it was not good. So, again, this is also something we have on our hearts with my co-host, Jose. We don't want to just share ideas, but we want to help people restore their relationships with each other and with God. And we don't want likes. That's not what we search, to have likes and, you know, approval. But we want to see the change in people's lives. So we always think about how to continue from online to offline. How to not do just the inspirational talks online, but how to connect that to offline world. For us, it's a combination of streaming and a social life. So one of the things we do is we invite our listeners to meet with us. Slovakia is small. It's pretty easy to travel across or around any city you want. So that's what we always say in our podcast, or pretty often. Hey, anytime you're with us, just give us a call, write us a message, and we will have a burger with you. And many people do. And when they do visit us, we take a picture together and we post that online to encourage others to do so. So during those years, we had lots of burgers. That's why I need to do biking. So this is the guy from East Slovakia. He came to visit us. We had the burger. He brought us coffee. He knows we like coffee. This is another couple that visited us, the same burger place, and the same burger place, and the same burger place. Actually, we have a relationship with the burger place since then. So a year ago, they gave us free bacon because they said, you helped us to survive the COVID because of the guests you brought in. And there's even a wedding we did because of the podcast. So that was a podcast wedding. So the newlyweds, they are our fans. They know us actually because they are from nearby church in Czech Republic. Their parents are listening to our podcast. We're friends with their pastor. So this was a easy thing to do. And they told us, we love your podcast and we want you as a podcast hosts to lead us into wedding and do the officiate the wedding. So we were officiating as a podcast co-hosts the wedding. The wedding was recorded and published online. And recently some couples wrote us email and they said, we like the way you do the weddings. Would you also do a wedding for us? So we do a lot of weddings. It could be a good business. So in our context, the best way we can do is to do it for free. But yeah, of course, one day if we are out of money, we can do the wedding. The thing is what I said at the beginning, people listen to our podcast or any online service in the gym, during the work in the garden, during cooking their food, during driving, during staying at home and just hanging on their phone. And I would, this is the last thing and then we go to Q&A. I will read four testimonies people told us when they met us offline during those burger times. So one was confession or testimony said by a young lady, married, like the couple came and she said us, I start to listen to your podcast in the season when my mom died and you gave me hope. Another testimony is from the older guy, a father of a family, and he was on his way out of the church. He was disappointed with the church somewhere in Slovakia, and his children convinced him to listen to our podcast, and we had a season about the church and the meaning of church. And this is what he wrote us in email. It was a long email, but he also said, I was on my way from the church, but you gave me a reason not to. Another is a testimony from a girl somewhere in our capital city, and she told us, I had a hard time at a secular school, and you helped me to survive. You gave me the arguments I could use, because she's the only conservative Christian in a liberal environment. And the fourth one is from a guy who is single, older than 30 years old, and we had a season on singleness, and he said, you changed my view completely and you helped me to embrace my singleness. And he said that the season about the singleness profoundly changed his approach to how he spends his life as a single person. And he told me in person, that was in-person meeting. So there are many stories like that. What I try to prove is that online is not a tool, it's a real place where you can meet real people and you can draw them to real life. And we as a church should be there, on the streets and online as well, both things. So there are some books I could recommend. Analog Church, I think I saw the book downstairs in the store, the Analog Church. No. But you can get them somewhere. I had to get this Meta Church book from US. Somebody had to bring it to me. That was written by a guy that works for Andy Stanley's church, North Point. And the only thing he does, he focuses on online content and explains how to use it. Nona Jones, I quoted her a couple of times. She gives a concept how to use the social media to have campuses online. You cannot use that really like word by word in our context, but it just helps you to think creatively. Analog Church gives a vision for analog community. And I use that book a lot as a message I share with people who are online to explain them, hey, you need a real community and this is the reason why. And The Anxious Generation is one of the best cultural analysis and data analysis about how the social media influences the young people and caused the depression between young people. And there's a clear correlation between social media, selfie cameras in the phones, which rise up in 2012, and the rate of depression. And in that book, The Anxious Generation, there's one chapter about the meaning of a community. And even though that's not a spiritual book, that was a very spiritual chapter. And the author confessed that, ooh, this is a little bit spiritual, but yeah, I think that's a great book. There are many more books you could use. These are just some of the books that I found inspirational during. I don't know if he is a Christian, but that's a secular study, like professional book. It's not a Christian. These three are from the Christian context. But this one is just to give you impression how much people are affected by the social media and phones, especially the young generation. If you are fighting for the young generation, that's a great tool.